I'm with Marilyn Yalom, author of The American Resting Place, 400 Years of History Through Our Cemeteries and Burial Grounds. In the sweeping history of America, as seen through its gravestones, graveyards, and burial practices, her book is stunningly illustrated with 75 black and white photographs snapped by her son, photographer Reed S. Yalom. The dedicated mother-son team visited each of the hundreds of cemeteries in the American Resting Place, following a coast-to-coast and north-to-south trajectory that mirrors the vast historic pattern of American immigration. Welcome to KABU, Marilyn.
Hello.
Hi there. Thank you for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
So 3 years of travel with your son, over 250 cemeteries visited, and all of this originated with a visit to your mother's grave?
Yes, when my mother died 11 years ago, I buried her in a cemetery that's within walking distance of my house. And since that time, I have walked back and forth and observed the changing seasons and the different ethnicities in her cemetery, and that's what propelled me into this book.
So just watching the ever-changing landscape of nature and gatherings, offerings, different headstones, all that was just enough for you to actually start taking notes?
Well, I started thinking on a small scale that I would do 1 year in the life of a cemetery. But in time, that broadened out into a history of 400 years in what has become the United States. And I've done that with the help of my son, because I certainly couldn't have done all of that moving around and going into unknown places without his help and, of course, with his eye, his visual eye.
Did you have to convince him to actually spend time in cemeteries, or was this kind of a joint aha project?
It was an aha project. Once he came into my mother's cemetery with me and we looked around and we began to understand that within the 20th century, enormous changes had taken place in our own community of Palo Alto, California. The cemetery where my mother is buried started out in the early 20th century with a majority, I would even say, an exclusive white Protestant population. And it wasn't until after World War II that one begins to see other gravestones marking different religions and ethnicities, Chinese characters and Japanese characters and Jewish stars and Buddhist lotus symbols. And that told us something about the changing nature of the population in our community and something about the changing nature of the population in the United States.
In your book, you talk about how Native American burial grounds were here, of course, in the States, and then all of a sudden there was an introduction of the European-style burial grounds. Is that something you found, obviously?
Yes, and I was determined that our photographic portfolio would begin with a photo of a Native American burial mound. It took us a while until we found the right one, one that was appropriate for a good photo. At Etowah in Georgia. And there you have the sense of the earth and of individuals returning to the earth. Native Americans of the Mississippi area buried their dead in layers, piling dirt upon the first layer and then upon the second layer, and sometimes those mounds built up to 40, 50 feet. There is the sense that the land belonged to them. And when Europeans came in the 16th and 17th century from Spain and from England, and then, of course, Holland and other places, burying their dead in the earth was another way of claiming the land.
Could you explain for us the use of the word cemetery and how we morphed from the definitions that we used to have, burial grounds, burying yards, churchyards, and how those are all quite different, and now we just use one defining term, the word cemetery?
Yes, that's a very interesting question, and it mirrors the evolution of cemeteries, or what were originally called burial grounds or graveyards in this country, so that in this book, although we trace, or at the same time that we trace the immigration patterns in this country, we also trace the evolution of the burial ground. Originally, the burial grounds were either right next to the church, as in Catholic Campo Santo-type cemeteries, or near the church, or certainly inner city. And these burial grounds or graveyards had a very forbidding atmosphere. They were somber. The gravestones often had a death's head on them, which was a skull with wings, the skull representing mortality and the wings the possibility of resurrection. And this was the predominant feeling in cemeteries or in what we call burial grounds for the 17th and 18th century. But with the Enlightenment and a change in mentality that took place in the second half of the 18th century, a less forbidding and more optimistic vision of burial and the afterlife came into being. The death's head morphed into a face with flesh on it and wings, which then morphed into an angel. And along about the beginning of the 19th century, the word cemetery came into popular usage to represent a place of sleep. It comes from the Greek idea, a dormitory. And that fits in with the idea of the cemetery not as a forbidding place of judgment where you were probably doomed to hell, but as a place where you are going to your eternal rest in a setting that will aid sleep and will offer comfort to mourners.
So also to help in aiding the non-forbidding look and feel, also for the visitors, we have now what we refer to as Memorial Park. So can you explain a little bit what the difference is there?
Yes. When I was talking about the 19th century, we developed what was called the garden cemetery or the rural cemetery. And the dead, very often their bones were taken out of cramped inner city burial grounds and moved to the country or to the suburbs. So first in the 19th century, there was the development of the rural cemetery, such as Mount Auburn in Cambridge, Mass., or all the beautiful, well-known cemeteries in the South, such as Savannah's Bonaventure. And this continued throughout the 19th and into the 20th century, but in the beginning of the 20th century, a new idea was developed in Southern California, and that was the idea of the Memorial Park. And the Memorial Park is even one step further away from the grim tombstones of the 17th and 18th century. The Memorial Park has flat stones, either in stone or in metal, and these are flush with the grass, and so you have the vision of wide expanses of lawn, which can be taken care of with power motorized lawnmowers, and with sprinklers. And so what you see in the Memorial Park is something that is closer to the beauty of a golf course mm-hmm. than the old-fashioned cemetery or burial ground.
And more functional. The backhoe can get into, so just for the functionality of burials, too.
Yes, it definitely is a move away from the emphasis on death and a greater emphasis on being one with nature. It was, of course, started, as I said, in Southern California in a place called, then I think it was called Glenwood, and we are very familiar with the forest lawn-type cemeteries, which have taken hold all over the United States.
And, of course, our huge tourist traps if you're in Southern California wanting to see where movie stars are buried.
Yes. That's certainly true, that we have tourist groups that now go to cemeteries, not just to see the movie stars in California, but cemeteries, after a period of being neglected and abandoned, are now coming back as tourist destinations. There was a piece in Forbes magazine travel section or online about this issue of cemeteries as tourist destinations. And cemeteries have found that this is a way of bringing people into cemeteries, showing them their wares, so to speak, and promoting their cemeteries, also a way of bringing in some revenue, because it may not be a whole lot to spend $10 or $15 or $20 per person for a special tour of a cemetery. But that's what's going on now throughout the United States in many, many unusual places where you wouldn't expect people to be doing tours of the famous women in a cemetery, or a Halloween event, and that's certainly what is occurring now.
And of course, a well-known example of preservation and revitalization is a young man from the Midwest, Tyler Cassidy, who came along, ventured out to Hollywood, and saw the old, decrepit Hollywood Memorial Cemetery just going down the drain. Put money in it, millions of dollars actually, revitalized, and now it's Hollywood Forever. And
yes,
like you've
Hollywood
mentioned, too.
Forever is now one of the more interesting cemeteries to visit after a period of great decline. It has been brought back, and it's a lovely place to visit and an interesting place, too. There are such actors as Tyrone Power and others, famous figures in the Hollywood world, but also people who have nothing to do with the industry, with the movie industry. There's a large section of Jewish residents. There's a large section now of Armenians who have come from the former Soviet Union, and each group has its own distinctive styles. I love the new tombstones that are being put up by Jews and Armenians, which are large and unusually artistic, and they have highly polished backgrounds with laser portraits of the deceased on them. So that's one part. Another part of the Hollywood Forever Cemetery has a special section for babies and children. And this is very, very colorful. It's mostly Latino, with many offerings, toys and cut flowers and plants and artificial flowers. So as you wander through that particular cemetery, you will see a variety of religions and practices. There's even a Thai Buddhist garden in the cemetery. In Hollywood Forever.
If you're just joining us, I'm with Marilyn Yalom, the author of The American Resting Place, 400 Years of History Through Our Cemeteries and Our Burial Grounds. In the book, Marilyn has a series of photo plates in the very front, and they correspond with her writings. You know, I found your photos of the burial grounds absolutely amazing, and it was really quite easy to lose myself as I stared at them and kind of wondered where they were and checked out just the difference. Did you find that your son had as much passion as you did, and how did you choose which ones actually made the cut of the book? I imagine there was just tons of them.
Well, that was one of the most interesting part of the book. First of all, we had been contracted to do about 35 photos. And when the people at Houghton Mifflin, my editor, and the design people saw the photos, they increased that number to 64. And that was on the model of a famous book, Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, where the photos stand by themselves at the beginning of the book. Just looking through them is a very moving experience. And many people have told us that or written that in reviewing the book. And then you get to the text, and the text, of course, refers back to the photos. Yes, Reed saw things that I didn't see. I would come armed with my library research, looking at inscriptions, and he would dutifully follow me about, and then he'd disappear because the light was right in one corner of the cemetery, or he would see a tree whose roots had engulfed the tombstones. And so over the course of 3 years, he became not my assistant, but really my co-worker, and the book reflects that.
When I see your pictures of the Hawaiian burial grounds, the stones that were actually up on a mound, and then a year later you say they're down and almost washed out into the ocean, and how history is kind of making its way further away, it all looks so different than what we have here in our area. Can you explain a little bit about that, please?
Yes, the Hawaiian experience was one of the best that we had, and we went there, Reed went there twice. I went there once, but Hawaii is different, and at the same time, it's similar, because you have the story of a native people, the Polynesians, who were living in Hawaii until the 18th century, and then Captain Cook and the, quote, white men came along to displace them. That happened particularly during the 19th century when the missionaries came, and so the native Hawaiian burial practices of placing their dead in sand dunes were replaced by the European idea of an enclosed cemetery. And we saw examples of this not only on the major island of Oahu, but on the island of Maui. And then, of course, you have, after the white men coming, you have Japanese and you have Chinese coming to work on their sugar plantations, and they have their own cemeteries, Chinese with Chinese, Japanese with Chinese, and they each look very different. The Japanese cremate, and they have beautiful stones above the urns, and the Chinese bury underground. So wherever we would go, we would be looking for the inscriptions. Sometimes, as you'll see in photos in the book, cemeteries that were abandoned and where the stones in rural parts of Maui are lying there even on the sand. Yes, it's a constant fight against nature, particularly in a place like Hawaii where the vines run rampant and cover up gravestones, and you've got the ocean coming in and washing stones out to the sea. So there is a fight to preserve those old cemeteries. And for the native Hawaiians, for them to reclaim the older burial grounds so that they don't get paved over or have hotels built on top of them.
Definitely an absolute shame, and like you mentioned too, us cemetery buffs know that the story of our country, it's written on the stone in the countless graveyards all the way across America, and to be lost to the paving of a hotel or to a roadway or to a max line or what have you is pretty horrible.
Well, I think what happened in New York City is among the most interesting and the most illustrative and in some ways the most tragic. In New York, as in the South, whites and blacks were not buried together. The blacks were buried in a vast burial ground called the Negroes Burial Ground, and the whites were buried on the other side of the wall, which became Wall Street, in places, fancy places like Trinity Church, which wrote expressly that in its charter of the late 17th century that no Negroes would be buried in Trinity Churchyard. So Trinity Churchyard has been carefully preserved, and you can still go there and see the names of many of America's toniest white Protestant individuals, such as Alexander Hamilton. But within walking distance, close walking distance, there was the Negroes' burial ground, or the African burial ground. And that had been completely paved over and forgotten until there was some excavation for an office building in the early 1990s, and because we now have laws requiring archaeological excavation, they discovered the bodies of, well, what is it, an estimated 20,000 African Americans. So one thing that happened after this discovery was that a space was set aside to become a national monument, and rites of ancestral return took place that celebrated these African Americans long forgotten. It was an extraordinary event in 2007, so you can see how recent all of this is.
Something our KABU listeners are very interested in is the concept of green burial. You mentioned that you went to a couple of those facilities in your travels.
Yes, I think there's no question that green burial is the wave of the future, and that we are seeing a movement taking place in this country that has already taken place to a greater extent in England, for example. So not only are we increasing the use of cremation nationwide, it's now 1 in 3 throughout the nation and at least 1 in 2 on the West Coast. And in addition to that, we are now moving towards green burial, which is that we are honoring the earth and the planet at the same time that we dispose of the body of an individual. And when we talk about green burial, what we mean is that we eschew coffins that are not biodegradable, and in many places, stones themselves. Instead, people are planting trees and bushes and moving towards what is, in my opinion, the most significant cemetery development that we are seeing at the beginning of the 21st century. They started in the South about 10 years ago in South Carolina, and then in Florida, and then in New York, and now, of course, in Marin County, California. And now in Oregon and Washington and other parts of the West, and even in the Arlington National Cemetery, which has a green option for any qualifying veteran. So I think that if you think it's only been 10 years since the first green cemetery opened, it's made great progress during that time, and it's linked, of course, to the environmental movement. And the reason that people choose green burials is that, first, they cost less than traditional burials, and second, they are in accord with our new concerns about the environment and preservation of the planet.
Where we are here in Oregon, outside of the city of Portland, there is one cemetery owned by a corporation, and it has dedicated 1 acre to actually green burial.
Oh.
And we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to see more. I have no doubt about that in my own mind. And I do think that the people who speak about green burial speak about it with the same religious fervor that people once spoke about cremation 100 years ago. There is the sense that this is the right thing to do, that the connection to the earth and preserving the earth has become a sacred trust. And at the same time, one can honor one's ancestors, honor the dead, by giving them a proper burial, but it doesn't have to be in a metal coffin and with embalming and all of those things that are not good for the planet.
I've been speaking with Marilyn Yalom, author of The American Resting Place, 400 Years of History Through Our Cemeteries and Burial Grounds. The book I have in front of me is lovely, and it's a hardcover, a lovely picture of Punch Bowl Memorial Park in Hawaii on the cover. Absolutely gorgeous photos inside, and the photo plates actually match to the information in the text that she speaks about as well. Anything else you want to share with us, Marilyn?
Well, it's been a great privilege to have been able to travel for 3 years with my son throughout the country and to rediscover my own country through the cemeteries and burial grounds. I had no idea before I started this project how rich our stone archives are, and my concern that they be preserved. It's not only my concern, but it is the concern of many grassroots organizations and individuals who are now out there making records of the inscriptions on tombstones, because many of them are fading or are being defaced by acid rain, and also cleaning up graveyards, patching up stones. It has been a grassroots effort that is perhaps unknown or less known than other political efforts in this country. And I think that given the fact that land is becoming scarcer and scarcer, we may look back, I won't be here, but in 50 years, to the history of cemeteries in America as something that tells us about the centuries of immigration, the various religions, and the multicultural nation that we became. I do think cemeteries bear that information, and that it's certainly worth our efforts to preserve it.
And on behalf of your travels, you also are a wife, a mother of four, grandmother of five. You've been a professor of French and comparative literature, and now you're a director.
Well, I'm not a director
you're
any
not.
Longer, but I am still a senior scholar at the Institute for Research, Gender Research at Stanford.
Author of numerous books, articles, and you're a pretty busy woman. So thank you so much for taking your time with us today and our KBOO listeners.
Well, I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn.